So tonight we have a special guest speaker who's been on the show before, Scott Billings from Glasgow, Scotland. Are you there?
Hi, Dana, yes.
And thank you for agreeing to come back on the show.
Oh, thanks for having me.
Yeah, so Scott, if people, our listeners remember, gave a couple of talks on the really fascinating topic of entropy, and he has agreed to come back on the show and to give a talk, but mainly to do a practice, which is really great opportunity for us, because normally we just have a very short practice at the end of a talk, so it will be really useful, I think, to have a longer practice, to have that opportunity. So thank you. And tell us a bit about what you plan to do tonight.
So the practice is a meditation on an ego, and this practice comes from the revolution of the dialectic. There's not specific chapters in that book, but it's blue time or rest therapeutics is the name or the description of the practice. And, you know, this book has always been something that's been a treasure trove for me of, you know, Master Samael's wisdom, and the process of the book really outlines and describes a really practical and profound way to understand our mind and the subconscious and the work with the ego in a practical way. And I think this practice really encapsulates the thread or the theme of what Master Samael is trying to describe in that book.
Yeah, and that's what we all need. We don't need any more theories, I think, in this information age. We need more practice and the inspiration to do it, or the didactic.
Yeah, that's right. And I think studying the book itself and studying all of the Gnostic teachings, we really get that depth of understanding through the practice and the application. And that's why this practice has always been so helpful for me, because it really takes place. It can only have effect and a really profound effect on us if we integrate it into our lives. And if we look at the sequence of chapters in this book, The Revolution of the Dialectic, it's Master Samael unfolds a process based around this idea of the good householder, which really gives an understanding as to what we're trying to do to transform ourselves. And but it's fundamentally based or rooted in practical life, and that's where the ego is really discovered. And so if we're using that the circumstances of an events of our daily life to be in a state of alertness and to have self-remembrance, then the consciousness has the capacity to perceive the ego in action. And obviously then we can die to that from moment to moment, but we can also then take that conscious observation of the ego and go in depth into meditation. So these two practices go hand in hand and work really quite well. So the meditation on the ego gives gives the space and time to really go in depth into the observation and comprehension and then elimination of the ego.
Okay, that sounds great. So let's dive in then.
Okay, so before we start, I thought I might just read one quote from the topic from the book, and it says it describes about the ego, and it says, "The I was neither created by God nor by the spirit nor by matter. The I was created by our own mind and will cease to exist when we have comprehended it totally in all the levels of the mind. It is only through upright action, upright meditation, upright will, upright means of earning a living, upright effort and upright memory that we can dissolve the I. So it's urgent to comprehend in depth all of this if we really want the revolution of the dialectic." And so I guess this quote in a way just describes how we live our lives and how that creates a center of gravity around the work and around the mystical death. So this practice is in eight steps, as those that are familiar with it, or if you look it up within the book. And really it can be set or pulled apart into two sort of segments. And the first is preparatory and serves to relax the body and relax the mind, to activate the consciousness and to begin to mix that with superior spiritual atoms of force, as it's described in the practice. And then the second practice, once the mind is passive and receptive and open to the consciousness, is a process of inner reflection and self-study to comprehend profoundly the consciousness in each of the 49 levels of the mind of the particular defect that we're looking at. So the basis of this is learning how to liberate the consciousness from the mind and the ego so that it can be studied intuitively and objectively and then integrally. So we'll go into the practice and I'll guide us through each of the steps. And so there'll be enough space through the practice to really get a sense of it. Obviously, this practice only really becomes, has that depth and profound, you know, significance to us when we do this on a continual basis and learn each of the steps and learn to navigate our way through it and learn how to understand in ourselves when each of the steps of the practice has actually fulfilled its purpose in terms of our consciousness and our interior. So I'll guide us through it and then we can have a, you know, a bit of a reflection after the practice and some tips as to how to start to integrate it.
Sounds great.
Okay, so finding a comfortable position and we begin this practice with a relaxation as we do with most or all practices. And each of us, no doubt, has our own way of relaxing the physical body. Just to see and feel a sense of relaxation moving through the body, perhaps from the top of the head down to the toes. Sensing and feeling each of the muscle groups and areas of the body. Perhaps integrating the breath in a relaxed and complete way to facilitate the movement and unblocking of the prana and allowing a deep sense of relaxation to fill the body. And this aspect of the relaxation really initiates a process of interiorization from the physical or the third dimension interiorly to the higher inner dimensions of our consciousness, of our being. So as we relax the physical body, we feel our energy, our vitality beginning to soften and relax, to flow smoothly. And each of the centers of the human machine can begin to become relaxed and open. And again, to initiate the relaxation of the mind through the relaxation of the body, in conjunction with the breath, the movement of the prana, the mind begins to become relaxed and serene. Within the feeling of relaxation, we can incorporate a sense of sleepiness. That lovely feeling of that gentle sleepiness, but with an alert and awake consciousness, as the physical body becomes completely relaxed. And once we feel we have a good sense of relaxation, we can move on to the next step, which is retrospection. And in this step, we're beginning to reflect and retrospect over the events of our day. If we're looking at a particular ego, we can retrospect on that ego itself, how it's manifested in the various circumstances of our lives, just in a gentle and relaxed way. But for this practice, let's just retrospect on the day we've just lived, either from the moment we woke up or from this moment backwards, but moving progressively and sequentially through the day in an objective and serene way, observing the events and circumstances of our day and to the degree that we can, the internal responses to those events. and the egos that might have arisen. Particularly, there's the ego that we're working on for this practice, noting when and how that particular ego manifested in all of its subtlety. Maintaining the objectivity of the consciousness to enable us to become aware of the activity of the ego, its manifestation in the different centers, our behavior and our actions in the context of the circumstances of our lives. Without becoming identified. It is within the events of our day and then the retrospection on those events that we come to see and know, observe and begin this process of comprehension of the ego. To learn to simply comprehend, to perceive, not to analyze and judge, to be critical of, to reject, just to observe the events of our day and the corresponding interior manifestations. And when we finish this step of the practice, having completed a retrospection of our day, we move to the next step, which is serene reflection, all the while maintaining our deep sense of relaxation with the concentration and relaxation of the mind. This step of serene reflection allows us to become familiar with the mood that we are in, our internal state in this moment. And then to serenely reflect is to observe the mind. So to imagine or to see the mind like a screen or a space into which thoughts manifest. This is the basis of self-observation. And to allow and to see a thought arise, enter the space or the screen of the mind, and to maintain objectivity, to not become identified with the thought which initiates a process of thinking, but to simply allow the thought to pass untouched through the mind and to leave and we return to a point of silence. And another thought arises. With time and familiarity, as we do this practice, we become more able and capable of just observing serenely the arising of thoughts and letting them pass and wash away through the mind. The thoughts begin to slow, become ordered, deeply relaxed, concentrated, with the consciousness awake and active. If we become identified with a thought and we're thinking, we simply let it go and come back to the process of serene reflection, observing the mind. Non-identification conserves the psychic energy. In this step, we're developing or building the capacity to keep the consciousness stable and at the center of our consciousness, the center of our mind, untouched by the arising of thoughts. With depth, the nature of the thoughts might change. Quantity and quality, we might start to see images. These are still simply representations in the mind that we observe and allow to pass away. There's no need to rush this stage of the practice. We can take as long as we need to really establish the consciousness at the center of our constitution, and so that we're able to serenely observe the arising of thoughts, to non-identify, and to simply let the thought pass through the screen of the mind. As the thoughts become less, as they become ordered, as we develop space between the thoughts, and we can see each thought arising and passing away, we can move to the next step, the fourth step, which is psychoanalysis. And from self-observation in the previous step, this initiates this process of comprehension, the capacity of the consciousness to perceive and comprehend the nature of the movements in our interior. So this psychoanalysis, based on the serene reflection, as a thought arises into the screen of the mind, as we see that thought manifests, we consciously observe this thought, and in seeing its nature, its origin, its motive, what it compels us to do, the sentiment, the reason for this thought. But in one glance, through conscious observation and therefore comprehension, not through rational, analytical thinking. So we grab hold of the thought, we observe it as it arises. The consciousness comprehends to the degree that it's able, and then we let go of the thought, allow it to pass through the screen of the mind, and we return to a state of peace and stillness. Another thought arises. We see the thought manifest into the mind, observe it, comprehend it to the degree that we can. Simply allow the understanding of the nature of the thought to manifest into awareness, and then let the thought pass without thinking, analyzing, or judging. Again, with time, this develops the capacity of the consciousness to comprehend without the need of the intellect. Maintaining and deepening our sense of relaxation, the openness of the mind and the capacity of the consciousness to stay stable. If we become identified with thoughts, we simply let them go and come back to the practice. With time and with repeated use of this exercise, the capacity of the consciousness increases to be able to comprehend, to observe the subtle movements of the mind, and to be able to perceive the nature and origin and motive of the thoughts, feelings that manifest in our interior. We need to give that space for the consciousness and not return to the analysis of the mind, of the intellect, and gradually learn to differentiate these two. Again, this step of the practice serves the purpose of further activating the consciousness, deeply relaxing the mind, establishing a base of non-identification and the capacity for the consciousness to begin to observe and comprehend. When we feel this state has been reached, we can move to the next step of the practice, which is the mantralization or the koan. From this relaxed and open state, using the mantras, we mix these magical forces in our interior universe. This continues to awaken the consciousness and deeply relax the mind. We use the mantra Gate Gate. In a conscious way, as we chant the mantra, we allow the vibration of the mantra itself to put put the mind into a completely receptive and tranquil state. Gate, gate, padagate, padasangate, bodhi, swaha, gate. Gate, padagate, padasangate, bodhi, swaha. Gate, gate, padagate, padasangate, bodhi, swaha. Let's spend a few more moments just internally pronouncing this mantra, allowing the subtle vibrations to deepen this relaxation, quietness and peace interiorly. Just resting a moment, allowing the vibrations of the mantra to completely open the mind as we prepare for the second stage of the practice, which is the superlative analysis. Here, during deep meditation, we continue this process of introspection. So we take a particular ego that we'll be investigating, and with the active conscious, we can penetrate all of the 49 layers of the mind. So just bringing the ego that we'll be looking at, the flavor or the feeling of the ego, just to the periphery of our mind. Whichever ego it is that we're looking at, and the first step is self-exploration. And this is to investigate in the 49 levels of the mind when it was that this ego, this defect, first manifested in our lives. And without using the mind, we allow the space for the consciousness to penetrate into the subconscious. And for the knowledge of this ego to manifest spontaneously. When did this ego first manifest? And images and memories will begin to surface into the mind as we trace deeper and deeper into the origin of this ego, simply allowing the consciousness to perceive and comprehend all of this. It may take us back to childhood, We might see images or glimpses from previous existences. But the earliest moment we can recall of the manifestation of this ego and then we ask ourselves, when this ego last manifested in our lives, the most recent time. Again, simply allowing the consciousness to receive from the subconscious this information. And we can note or see, despite time and space, when this ego first manifested and when it last manifested, it is the same ego, the same nature, the same flavor, despite the changing circumstances of our lives, despite time, aging, this ego is the same. And holding that feeling, that flavor, the nature of the ego, we can begin to investigate and inquire, again in a very receptive and conscious way. When this ego has the most strength to manifest in our lives, in what circumstances? In our relationships, at work, when we're by ourselves, in particular activities. Maintaining the luminescence of the consciousness with the mind completely open and receptive, we can go through these various aspects of our lives, deeply comprehending the nature and function and motive and activity of this ego that we're inquiring or investigating, without judging, without rejecting, without becoming identified, simply consciously observing this ego in our lives. Maintaining this deep sense of non-identification, we can take as long as we need with this step of the practice to deeply comprehend the varied and multiple ways in which this ego manifests in our lives. And the impact it has in the interior, in our centers, on other people, the events of life, and the imbalance that it creates, all through conscious comprehension. And when we've investigated this ego in these varied circumstances, we can move to the next step, which is self-discovery. And this is to investigate what nourishes this particular ego. And the relationship it has in the matrix of our psychology. So having seen the circumstances in which this ego manifests in our lives, we can see which kind of egos it originates from. And therefore is dependent upon. So perhaps taking an event or a circumstance in our lives, seeing when and how this ego manifests, what circumstances it requires to manifest exteriorly and interiorly, and then seeing the ego that was there prior. And then from that scenario to see the ego that may originate from the ego that we're looking at. Once this ego manifests in our lives, to see how other egos arise to justify, to compensate. To appease. Again, with this step of the practice, we can spend as much time as we need in the privacy of our own homes to deeply comprehend the context of the ego and the place it holds in the matrix of our psychology and our subconscious. For now, having comprehended the ego to the degree that we have, we move to the next step, which is self-judgment. In this step, we place the ego, the defect, in the dock, in the jury, of the jury, of the in the defendant's bench. And we accuse the ego for all the damage it causes in our lives, how it separates us from the being, how it consumes all of our psychic energy and the energy of each of the centers of the human machine. Exhausting us, imbalancing us. How it harms other people, our relationships. Creating disorder and chaos and imbalance for which we are responsible to rectify through karma. Through the conscious comprehension of this ego, of its nature, its origin, its motive, its activity, its purpose, its function. Through this deep comprehension and understanding, we judge this ego for the harm that it causes. Try to see the reality of the ego sitting in the chair of the accused. To the degree that we've comprehended it, perhaps is the degree to which we can consciously perceive the reality of this ego. And all of the harm that it brings. And then we can ask and we can imagine, in the absence of this ego, what virtue would replace it? With the liberation of the consciousness trapped in this ego, how would we act? Allow ourselves to be guided and illuminated by the free consciousness. To know how it would be in the absence of this ego. And then turning our back on the ego, we face before us our Divine Mother. Our beautiful Divine Mother. And dropping to our knees, we beg her and plead of her to eliminate this ego. For only she has the power. Having comprehended and repented for all that this ego is, we renounce to it profoundly, deeply, completely. And we ask our Divine Mother from the depths of our heart to eliminate this ego. And we can use the mantra Krim, seeing and feeling the Divine Mother piercing the ego, liberating the consciousness. Krim. We can do this as many times as we need, begging and imploring our Divine Mother to eliminate this ego and to see and feel the light returning to us from this ego, to our free and awake consciousness. Carrying this feeling of complete renunciation. And in our own way, we can give thanks to our Divine Mother for her support, her guidance, her forgiveness, her strength, her force. And we can finish this practice.
Thank you, Scott, for leading us into that very profound, deep practice. I myself was reflecting on how this ego, we want to eliminate it. It causes so much destruction and pain, but within it I was perceiving that it's just truly mistaken. It thinks it's got our best intentions in mind, or it has the answer, but it is just really mistaken.
That's a really good insight. You know, I think these are the types of things when we really prepare the mind well and we take the time to get that depth in the practice, the insights we can get into the nature of the ego and the function of the consciousness really transforms our perspective on life and gnosis and our practice. And that is our own gnosis. It's our own wisdom that we gain through that process of introspection and the comprehension of the ego. So these steps of the practice, the eight steps, are, you know, a process in itself, and hopefully from the practice that we just went through, you can see that although it's a stepwise fashion, we really have to make the practice our own and become familiar with each step of the practice as an individual step, and to know how it functions and what its purpose is and what it's trying to achieve in our interior, so that we can develop those skills and those capacities to really prepare ourselves well, to open the mind and then develop the capacity of the consciousness to have that objectivity, to not identify and to conserve the psychic energy, and then to be able to really penetrate deeply into the subconscious. But the basis of all of this is really the integration of it in our lives, so that if we're investigating a particular ego, we don't really rest. You know, once we finish this practice, if we're doing it in the evening, we can go to sleep and we'll have dreams. We might get insights into the ego, and then we take that into our day and we're investigating the ego in our day, where and how it manifests, you know, in a state of self-remembrance, in a state of alertness. And so we get more and more conscious comprehension of the ego through our day, and that enables us to go deeper into the practice itself. I find that if I haven't really had that work in the day, then there's just a superficiality in the meditation, that because there's no material for the consciousness to really work with. So if I'm really using the events of my day to see where and how that particular ego that I'm looking at manifests, and I'm trying to understand it, and I'm trying to, you know, to maintain that strength of the consciousness in the day, to not be overcome by the ego, and to see all the minute details of the ego, where and how they manifest, and the particular centers that they manifest in, and the nature and feeling of those, then when I get to do the practice, there's so much depth, because there's the consciousness has seen the ego in activity through so much of the day. But again, to be flexible with the practice. So, you know, there's steps for the practice that prepare us. For example, if we wake up through the night and we've had a dream of a particular ego, and the mind is quiet, we don't have to go through all the steps of preparation. We can just go straight into the superlative analysis. If we see an ego through the day and we have the time and space, we can go into the practice right there. You know, we can go straight to the judgment and prayer, asking the Divine Mother. So once we become familiar with the practice, we can use it as we need to in the circumstances of our lives. Also, we find, you know, I've found that if I'm looking at a particular ego, using this practice and investigating a particular ego, then I get to a certain point and I find there's another ego that's intimately related to that ego, then you can just cycle back. So rather than going through the whole practice again with another ego, once you finish the judgment and the prayer and the elimination of the ego that I'm working on, you can just go back and start the superlative analysis or the investigation of that ego that's related. I mean, have you found this, Diana, too, that you're working on a particular ego and you see that there's another ego that really is the basis of the ego that we're working on, and then you find you have to work on that ego as well?
Yeah, most definitely. Yeah, even in that practice, it was hard to really try and just isolate what it was exactly that was the most important or damaging to be able to, to work on and comprehend deeper.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and I think that's the beauty of this practice is, you know, once we start to see the relationships between the egos, we work on a particular ego, and then we get an insight into something that's really formative for that ego, and then we can go back and work on that because we're already in a state of introspection and meditation.
Yeah, they're all really so intertwined and linked, and sometimes I think you can feel dismayed. And you think, you see this, you see that. But really, every bit of work is cumulative. At the end of the day, whatever you comprehend is going to help.
Yeah. I think some of that too is related to the stage of the work that we're at. because the work is processed over the path itself. And so as we go deeper, as we develop the, you know, the bodies in the different dimensions, then that enables us to go deeper into the subconscious, into the different 49 layers of the mind. So depending on the level of work that we're doing, you know, we have only a certain capacity to penetrate into the subconscious. And then knowing that, you know, as we go deeper into the work, as we progress along the path, we'll meet that ego again at another level. So whatever level we can reach at that particular time, that's our work. But I think that the main thing I've seen, particularly from this book, The Revolution of the Dialectic, which is such an amazing book, is the integration of this mystical work into our lives, into the life of the good householder. And to really see the importance of working through the day, you know, to maintaining that sense of self-remembrance and the state of alertness, but really carrying with us all the time that feeling of investigating an ego, that feeling of dying, that we're not living just to entertain ourselves and to be engaged in events and to live life through the personality, but we're really living to comprehend ourselves and to always be moving closer to the being. And so then we see the events of our lives and the circumstances not just as good or bad, but as opportunities to comprehend more deeply the ego it is that we're working on at the time. And that takes the sting out of life in a way. You know, we develop this center of gravity around the work and this flavor of the mystical death in our lives.
It really is a fantastic book and definitely inspired to want to look more into it in the show, in various different segments, because I plan to do some book reviews. Well, it's hard to review a whole book in an hour, but definitely some chapters in that book, and it's a fantastic book, very practical. And as you said, it you know, has the psychological aspect of comprehension, but then with the mystical help that we need, which we're not going to go far without that. So, yeah.
No, that's right. And I think the chapters past this this practice, the rest there at blue time or rest therapeutics, you know, is reasonably early in the book. And then after that, there's the Master Samael's description of meditation and the mind, and introduces this practice of Mochow, which is so, you know, fundamental. It's such, those four or five chapters where he describes meditation and Mochow and the nature of the mind is just wonderful. And I think really helps to deepen our capacity to really go, you know, deep within ourselves and to have that capacity when we're meditating, not to just be superficial and for the mind to still be active and to not really do the practices with the consciousness.
Mm-hmm.
Well, I think, yeah, just to sum up then from this practice, I spent a lot of time when we first were given this practice. You know, I really took the time to work with each of the steps. And for me, to understand this, the process of the practice itself. And the first couple of steps, the serene reflection and the psychoanalysis, to really, you know, I would spend hours each night just learning what the consciousness is, how it functions inside of me, just distinct of the mind, and how to create that capacity to observe the arising of the thoughts and then develop the capacity to begin to consciously comprehend something, you know, distinct of the mind. And then to really see that if we can get that sense, then, you know, we have something precious when the consciousness can function inside of us, distinct of the mind. And when we can have that capacity to not identify, we start to develop a lot more energy, because as soon as we identify with an ego, it starts consuming our psychic energy. And that in each of the different centers, that we need that energy for so much of the, you know, further practices in gnosis in terms of in alchemy and developing the bodies and so on. So it's a really precious resource that we have, and to then be able to conserve that and to use that in the practice and to have that strength and familiarity with that state of consciousness and to develop, to know how to be able, or to be able to get into the mind like that in a really intuitive way. because I've seen in myself, you know, it's so easy to do these practices just intellectually and therefore superficially, and they don't really bring the benefits that, that Master Samael is describing. And then, you know, we don't change. It's, we can be working on a particular ego for a long time and we look back and we just, you know, it's been a year and we haven't really changed in this ego that we're working on. Mm-hmm. And so to learn how to consciously do this practice, to intuitively do it, and to trust that the capacity of the consciousness to really comprehend the nature of the ego. And then the humility to really place ourselves at the feet of our Divine Mother and ask her to eliminate it. And there's so many wonderful things about this practice in terms of, you know, the path and how it unfolds and how we work. So it's a real favorite of mine.
Hmm.